Bloodcraft, The Shadow Sorceress, Book 2. Written by Belinda Sheehan. Narrated by Angela Daw. Chapter 1.
Tom, put me down!
Marcy squealed, the sound of her tinkling laughter mixed with his deeper chuckle as he swung her around.
You've made me the happiest man alive. Why would I ever want to put you down?
He said, his voice dropping to a low whisper as he let her slide down his front, his grip on her small frame never faltering. He never faltered. It was one of the many things she loved about him. Ever since they'd met, he was there, reliable and dependable, nothing like her past relationships. It was such a change of pace to have someone you could truly rely on, almost a heady experience. Giggling, she threw her head back and stared up at the stars dotting the August summer night. It looked like an inky blanket stretched out before her, and the air was filled with possibility. There had been a part of her hoping he would propose, but she'd never imagined it would happen so quickly. She'd fallen for him from the moment she'd set eyes on him, and she would forever be grateful to Grace for setting them up on that blind date 6 months ago. He swung her around once more, his hands tightening on her waist as he held her flush to the front of his body. The moment his grip changed, Marcy returned her gaze to his face. The love in his eyes made her heart swell. If she wasn't careful, it would burst with happiness. No one deserved so much joy. The thought was a sobering one, and it hit her like a slap in the face. It was the same thing her father had always told her. Happiness and joy came with a price, and it was always one you didn't want to pay. Her stomach flipped nervously and she planted her hands on Tom's shoulders, halting his movements.
What's wrong?
He asked, the expression on his face instantly switching to one of concern.
It's silly, really.
You can tell me anything, you know that. Whatever is bothering you.
His face changed then, the concern slipping as something else swept in to take its place.
You don't regret saying yes, do you? If you need time.
Lifting her hands to his face, Marcy gripped him, staring deep into his blue eyes.
I don't regret anything, not where you're concerned, and you know that. I love you, it's just my stupid brain.
Tom grinned, the relief in his eyes causing her heart to skip a beat.
Hey, don't say that. I love your brain,
he teased, the lilt in his voice and the curl of his lips drawing a smile from her.
It's just, what if this is all too much?
She said, searching his face for any sign that he had the same fear.
Too much?
Happiness. What makes us deserve so much more of it than anyone else? What if something happened?
Nothing is going to happen, Marcy. Where's all this coming from?
I've seen what it can do to people. I watched my parents, and they were so in love. But when my mother was diagnosed with cancer, well, I watched that bring them closer and yet rip them apart. They knew what was coming. My father was forced to watch her suffer, all the time knowing there was nothing he could do.
Marcy, really? That's what's worrying you? Come on, that won't happen to us. And even if it did, it wouldn't change how I feel about you. It wouldn't change the fact that I want to marry you, to proclaim to the world that you're mine,
he said, cupping her cheek softly.
And I'm sure if you asked your dad if he'd been given the choice when he met your mom to walk away and save himself the heartbreak, I don't think he'd trade the time he did have with her.
He was right, of course. Her father wouldn't change the time he'd shared with his wife, and Marcy knew it, but she also knew the price he'd paid for that love. The price her mother had paid. Dying was hard enough, but to know who you were leaving behind, what pain your passing would bring, that was the kind of guilt you couldn't shake free of, and Marcy had seen it in her mother's eyes in the days leading up to the end. It was just all still so fresh. A year wasn't a very long time. Sucking in a deep breath, she pushed her morbid thoughts aside. Had she lost her mind? This was supposed to be one of the happiest moments of her life, and she was ruining it by dwelling on things she had no control over.
I'm sorry, I can't help it. It's just the thought of ever losing you.
You're not gonna lose me, Marcy Colt. I love you, and I promise that no matter what, I will always be by your side.
If you make that promise to me, Tom, you better keep it, she said with a wide smile as she wrapped her arms up around his neck. Lifting her slowly, he dipped his head and crushed his lips to hers. Marcy didn't fight the kiss, allowing it to wash over her, the love she felt for him stealing all rational thought from her brain. Tom pushed her down towards the grass, and Marcy giggled, her hands pressed to his chest. Not here, not in public, she whispered, heat flooding into her face. She could imagine the color her cheeks were turning.
No one's around,
he said, pressing feather-light kisses along the length of her neck as his hands slid down over her shoulders to her breasts. Breathless, Marcy let her head drop back as he tasted her skin, the feel of his hands igniting a fire in her belly as they slid lower. He stiffened over her, his fingers digging into the soft flesh of her breasts as his head jerked back and he grunted. Marcy cried out, pain flaring through her body as his hands spasmed across her delicate feminine flesh.
You're hurting me,
she said, her voice choked as Tom dropped his full weight on her. Fear flooded her veins as she stared up into his pain-stricken face, and she fought to roll his weight from her body.
What's wrong? What's happening?
She cried, her voice strangled by panic and fear.
Marcy, run,
he said, using his last ounce of strength to push up from her body, allowing her to crawl out from underneath him. Once free, Marcy stared at Tom. The long, curved blade protruding from between his shoulder blades sent her mind into overdrive, and she opened her mouth to scream, but there was no sound. Instead, she could feel her vocal cords as they constricted in on themselves, panic making it impossible for anything more than a small sob to fall from her lips. She wanted to go to him, to help him, but the blade hadn't entered his back on its own. The small, hunched man holding it stood over Tom and slowly pulled it free. Marcy watched on in shock as the blade slid free, but the blood she expected to see covering the bone-white blade wasn't there. How was that even possible? The attacker standing over Tom's motionless body lifted his gaze to her, his eyes friendly, a wide smile curling his lips as he stepped towards her.
Your turn, dear. You don't know how much your sacrifice is appreciated. We thank you,
he said, his voice quiet and unassuming. Instinct kicked in and Marcy turned, her feet flying across the grass as she ran. She'd get help, she'd save Tom, and pain ripped through her as the blade slid in through the center of her back. She opened her mouth, but there was only a choking sound, her body spasming like a butterfly on the end of a pin. The moist breath of her attacker fluttered against her ear as he leaned in over her.
Truly, your sacrifice will not be wasted. You will be mother to a new rising.
He pulled the blade free as he spoke, and Marcy dropped onto the grass. She could feel it spreading through her, an all-consuming darkness that opened like the rotting petals of a perverse flower. The feel of the man's hands on her ankles filled her with revulsion as he grabbed her and began the arduous process of dragging her back across the ground to where Tom had fallen. Tom. Tears gathered in the corners of her eyes as she stared up at the inky, star-filled sky spread out above her. He'd promised to never leave her. But as the man with the bone blade moved her hand, entwining her fingers with Tom's, Marcy couldn't help but think this wasn't what she'd had in mind when they pledged each other forever. Chapter 2. Staring up at the ceiling, I watched the dust motes dance in the cold morning light. I wasn't a morning person, but the nightmares made sleep impossible. Just another one of the many gifts my half-sister had left me with. Stretching my arm out, I flexed my fingers, pain tingling up into my elbow. The white stretch bandage didn't really give it the support it needed, but the cast had been far too restricting. How was I supposed to train? How was I supposed to defend myself with what felt like a bulky lump of cement wrapped around my arm? Wincing, I pushed myself up in the bed and swung my legs over the side of the mattress, the remnants of the nightmares lingering in my head. The memory blocks my mother had placed in my head were well and truly gone, and I remembered everything. Nighttime was the worst. My mind seemed to take some sort of sick pleasure in replaying every sordid detail of what I had done to my father. Well, what the demon had done to him.
But I'd summoned it to this plane of existence, and there wasn't an excuse for my selfishness. I was a monster, plain and simple. Climbing to my feet, I stumbled to the bathroom and flipped on the cold tap. Cupping a handful of icy water, I splashed it onto my face in an attempt to shake the last of the cobwebs from my head. The guilt was beginning to gnaw a hole in the middle of me, and I half expected to see a creature birth forced from my stomach, all teeth and claws as it chewed my intestines into a thick, gloopy paste. Don't be so bloody gross and dramatic, Amber. You've got enough issues. The voice of my conscience had become harsher, more judgmental ever since I'd discovered the truth. The sound of my cell phone's shrill ring jerked me from my own thoughts, and I jogged back into the bedroom, scooping it up from the bedside locker. Graham's name flashed across the screen, and without hesitation, I jabbed my finger against the large green accept button. The speaker fizzed against my ear, and I cringed. Wherever Graham was, the cell service was obviously crap.
Amber, can you hear me?
His voice cut through the static. Graham, where are you?
I went to see Jess.
The preternatural prison wasn't like the human prisons. Humans abhorred being held captive. The urge to escape was always foremost in their minds, but armed guards and heavy metal bars were usually enough to keep them trapped. Where the Fae, werewolves, or in Jessica's case, vampires were concerned, they had all the same desires as their human counterparts, except their desires were amplified to fever pitch. And then, of course, there was the little issue that human restrictions couldn't keep them contained. Metal bars were nothing more than a nuisance, and run-of-the-mill bullets wouldn't do much to stop a vampire with mind control or a werewolf who'd gone rogue. At any one time, there were no more than 20 preternatural prisoners kept in containment, and each and every one faced execution if found guilty of the crimes they'd been accused of. When you were a monster, there was no such thing as life in prison.
I'm going to pick you up. We might have something.
His voice faded in and out, the popping and fizzing of the static electricity surrounding him making the call practically impossible. The line went dead, and I dropped the phone back onto the bed. Jessica was another headache I really didn't need. She was guilty, there was no escaping that fact, but everything she'd done had been under the influence of her vampire boyfriend, and if she was still human, then the courts might have been more willing to listen. But she was a vampire now, and her future certainly wasn't looking bright. What Graham honestly thought I could achieve was beyond me, but I knew he wanted me to do something, talk to someone in charge. The only problem was that I wasn't convinced I wanted to help Jessica. The things she'd done, well, it wasn't something you could really come back from. And I still couldn't shake the memory of her looking at her father like he was a perfectly marbled rare steak. She'd wanted to rip his throat out, made a bloody good attempt at it, and if it hadn't been for Nick swooping in to stop her. The demon brand on my shoulder itched and tingled, sending a shudder of revulsion rolling down my spine. Glancing down at it sent a flutter through my stomach. It needed to go, there was no doubt about it. Every minute I had to spend with that thing's brand seared into my skin was a moment too many. There wasn't much information on demon brands. It seemed anyone who ended up with one had obviously not been in the sharing mood, and so what little information I could find out about it was sparse, to say the least. But I could only imagine what it would do to me if I didn't do something about it. Demons weren't to be messed with. I knew that from experience. The memory of my father's face twisted in agony flashed through my head before I could stop it, and I swallowed back the bile that crawled up my throat. I would find a way to atone for my sins, no matter the cost. And while I was doing that, I would figure out a way to send that goddamn demon back to hell where it belonged before it had the chance to hurt anyone. How I was going to do all of these miraculous things hadn't yet come to me, but I needed something to believe in, because if I didn't, then my own personal demons were going to eat me alive.
Chapter 3.
Graham, why are we out here? I thought this was ruled a human homicide, I said, watching the cops move around the taped-off crime scene. They'd been forced to close off the entire river gardens in an attempt to prevent the reporters from snapping pictures of the bodies. The last things the families of the victims needed to see was their loved ones' remains splashed across the front page of all the major news outlets in King City.
It was. I looked the case files over myself, but I wanted to get you down here to take a look in person.
I don't understand, I said.
You will,
he said cryptically. Glancing over at him, I studied his face carefully, but his expression was guarded. There was obviously something he wasn't telling me about the case, and Graham was the type of man to hold on to his secrets until he was ready to spill them. I, on the other hand, wasn't exactly the patient type. He grabbed the edge of the crime scene tape and lifted it into the air, holding it in place so I could duck beneath it. He'd been completely silent on the ride over, and every time I'd asked him about the case, he'd batted it aside with some sort of wishy-washy vague answer that didn't tell me anything at all. "How's Jessica?" I asked, doing my best to change the subject. The more nonchalant I could be about the case we were stumbling into the middle of, the faster Graham would spill his true reasons for us being out here. The wind rippled the grass at my feet, and I wrapped my leather jacket a little tighter around my body. It shouldn't have been so cold, at least not in the middle of September, but one look at the pristine white forensic tent sent an icy shiver racing down my spine. The thought of what lay inside. Well, it wasn't something I wanted to think about, but then I was going to have to do a lot more than just think about it.
"She's doing as well as she can,"
Graham said, his voice curt and clipped. I shot him a look back over my shoulder. His expression was as closed as before, but there was a slight flinching around his eyes. Clearly, even thinking of his daughter caused him pain, and I couldn't blame him. She faced the executioner if the jury found her guilty of the crimes she'd committed. Both I and her father knew for certain she had committed them, but he loved her, and I wasn't going to hold that against him. "Have they set a date for the trial?" He shook his head, and I could see the first real flicker of emotion in his eyes.
"Not yet, but I know they don't want to wait. They want it all over and done with as quickly as possible. It's an election year, and they can't afford to have a blot like this on their copybooks. The public needs to know they can trust the mayor, that he'll do what needs to be done to keep them safe."
There was a bitterness laced through Graham's words that had me taking a second glance in his direction. I'd never heard him speak with such condemnation for the ones in charge. He'd always struck me as someone with great respect for the established institutions. But that wasn't entirely true either. If he was that kind of man, then he would have turned me into the authorities the second he knew what I was. Instead, he'd chosen to work alongside me. That wasn't exactly the sign of a man enamored with the run of things.
"Graham, I'm sorry."
It was such an inadequate thing to say, but I honestly couldn't think of anything better. He nodded and dropped his gaze to the ground. He blamed me for what was going on. As far as Graham was concerned, I held some sway within the elite, and I could put a stop to the trial and spare Jessica's life. And perhaps I could, although John was certainly no fonder of me than he had been before. His hatred for me knew no bounds. Given the first opportunity, he would see me out of a job, but he couldn't deny the fact that I'd saved his and the elite's ass. The glowing report I'd received from Anthony Barbosa, or the Machine, as everyone liked to call him, had cemented my position within the organization. Whether John liked it or not, I was the media darling of the elite now, and I sure as hell wasn't going anywhere. Of course, if everyone found out what actually happened in that graveyard with my half-sister and the demon I'd summoned, I'd be on the slab right next to Jessica awaiting execution. That thought alone was enough to sour my stomach.
"Wasn't expecting to see you lot down here,"
a male voice called out, drawing me out of my reverie and back to reality. My thoughts hadn't been pleasant ones, but they sure as hell beat the reality of tramping across the grass toward the forensic tent. The Sidwell case had been hard enough to deal with. The crime scene was something I hadn't been prepared to deal with. And after everything that had happened, I knew for a fact that whatever awaited me wasn't something I could be prepared for. Death was a reality of the job, but knowing and doing were two very different things. A young detective jogged up from the riverbank toward us, the confusion on his face almost comical. He raked his hand back through his wavy blonde hair, causing it to stand on end. I fought to hide my smile. His blue eyes sparked with curiosity as he came to a standstill before us.
"Just thought it was better to be thorough,"
Graham answered with a smile on his face as he held his hand out to the young detective. There was a flicker of admiration in the young man's face as he gripped Graham's outstretched hand.
"Graham, I didn't think I'd ever get to see you out in the field again after everything that happened, and especially not with the elite. You never believed in any of that crap,"
the young detective said.
"Life has a horrible way of proving you wrong, Dex,"
Graham said with a sad smile before turning back to me.
"Morgan, this is Dexter Gray, one of the smartest and youngest men I've ever seen rise through the ranks to become detective.
Graham spoke like a proud father as he presented the smiling Dexter to me.
My friends call me Dex, and any friend of Graham is a friend of mine, Morgan.
He held his hand out to me. His fingers wrapped around mine, a warm, firm grip as he pumped my hand vigorously. Sucking in a deep breath, I fought to control my expression as pain speared up through my forearm and into my shoulder. As far as the doctors were concerned, the break wasn't fully healed. The doctor had mentioned something about me removing the cast too soon. I shook my head. You can call me Amber. Morgan is my last name, and only Graham calls me that, I said, my smile turning to a grin as I cast a quick look in my partner's direction. Graham shrugged and stared at us both, utterly unapologetic.
Morgan sounds tougher,
he said, the hint of a smile lighting his face. Dex's eyes lit up with amusement.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you, Amber. I've heard a lot about you.
I stared at him in surprise. I was so used to nobody knowing me that to hear someone say they'd heard about me was more than a shock. How could he possibly know me? I certainly didn't know him, and the greeting he'd shared with Graham told me they hadn't been in contact in quite some time.
In the paper, I mean. You're all over it, with the upcoming court case and everything.
He trailed off and shot an apologetic look in Graham's direction.
I'm sorry about Jessica. I can't imagine how that feels. Well, we're not here to discuss that. Take us down to the tent, Dex,
Graham said, the strain of his emotion evident in his voice. Dex threw me a helpless look and I shook my head. There was nothing he could do, and certainly nothing he could say, to make Graham feel better. Reading the look in my eyes, he nodded almost imperceptibly and his expression shifted. His full lips curled down in displeasure and his bright eyes dimmed as he turned towards the tent.
It's a weird one. It's the reason they sent it over to you lot first. And while the preliminary file had some oddities, ultimately it appears to be all too human.
I followed the two men as they started down towards the riverbank, their conversation fading into the background as I took in my surroundings. It was so open, so exposed. But even with the small amount of detail I'd managed to glean about the case from my sneak peek at Graham's file, it was far too public to commit such a crime. They'd obviously been killed elsewhere and moved here. The grass shivered around me as though the earth itself felt the chill of death on the air. My skin started to crawl, thousands of skeleton fingers beating a tattoo out on my back, and it took all of my effort just to snap free of the feeling. I couldn't feel any magic on the air. Nothing that suggested that what had happened here was anything but some sick creep's perverse fantasies. And yet I could feel the ground itself calling out to me, warning me.
Morgan!
Graham's voice snapped me free of my thoughts and I jerked my attention in his direction.
What the hell are you doing?
He said, grabbing my arm and tugging me backwards. Graham, what the— I trailed off, suddenly realizing what exactly he was dragging me back from. The river raged just inches from where I'd stood, the current unusually strong for August. Two black scorch marks had been burned into the earth where my booted feet had stood just moments before. I was doing magic, I said, my whisper filled with shock, my hand automatically reaching up to brush against the demon mark seared into my skin. It tingled against my skin, reminding me of how it felt when the demon had marked me. The pain had been excruciating. Glancing down at my hand, my gaze was drawn to the flickering blue spark of my magic as it danced across the tips of my fingers. I'd gone from a witch without any true magic to one with far too much. So much it seemed to leak from my pores and cause mayhem wherever I went. It was utterly out of control, and I had a sinking suspicion that my inability to harness it was connected to the demon mark.
You could say that. I sent Dexter into the tent ahead of us when I noticed you wandering off. There's no way I could explain what was going on with you without raising suspicion. He's no fool, Morgan. He's one smart cookie, and if he thinks for one second that there's some sort of skeleton in your closet, he'll dig it out,
Graham said, giving me a small fatherly shake. Closing my eyes, I sucked in a deep breath and fought to clear my mind. The earth screamed in my head. Whatever had happened here had offended it deeply. But I couldn't be sure if that had been caused by my out-of-control use of magic or if whatever had happened inside the forensic tent had scarred the area.
Christ on a cracker,
Graham said, his words making me smile as I opened my eyes and peered down at where my magic had scorched the earth. The marks were fading. Swallowed by the earth itself would have been a far more accurate description of what was happening. The ground rolled, shuddering the way a cat might if you ran your hand across its fur in the wrong direction.
You need to get a grip on it, Morgan. If any of the cops here had seen what you were up to, well, they're not going to be as understanding as I am about the situation.
It's not exactly a science, I said. I couldn't keep the irritation from my voice. It wasn't his fault, but he, above all people, had to know that what I was dealing with wasn't exactly normal. For me, anyway. I'd spent my life being a witch void of any real power. Most witches my age were trained in their craft, deeply disciplined by years of honing and harnessing their abilities. I'd come to a grudging understanding that I would never be like them. That was, until Lily had removed the barriers my mother had placed within me, tearing them all away and leaving me utterly at the mercy of my own power.
Evidently,
he said with a small smile.
At least for now you're safe. No one saw you.
So let's just get this over with in case my magic flips out again. He nodded, smile disappearing, his face taking on a grim seriousness that had me swallowing hard. I didn't want to follow him away from the water's edge. I could turn tail and run, race back to the car, lock the doors, and refuse to come out. But what would that achieve? Absolutely freaking nothing. Trudging over the grass, I followed him to the tent, my heart beginning to race in my chest as I broke out in a clammy sweat. With one final glance back up at the road and Graham's car parked in the parking lot, I swallowed back the fear that was doing its damnedest to crawl up the back of my throat and ducked in through the white tent flap, the sound of it slapping back into place echoing in my ears. Chapter 4.
Everything all right with you two?
Dex asked. There was no mistaking the curiosity in his voice as his gaze flipped between the two of us.
Yeah, Morgan just wanted to get a lay of the land is all,
Graham said. Once again, his mastery at batting the question aside amazed me. It had to be a skill he'd learned on the force, because he sure as heck hadn't picked it up in the elite. Most of the other elite officers had all the subtlety of a brick through a window. My stomach rolled and I crinkled up my nose. There was a strange smell hanging in the air inside the tent, and as soon as the waft of fresh air cleared, my senses were quickly overwhelmed. It wasn't particularly unpleasant, but there was just no getting away from the scent. It filled my nose, the tang of it coating my tongue, and I knew that no matter how hard I washed my clothes, it would stay with me.
What is that?
Graham asked, voicing the question swirling in my head.
Your guess is as good as mine,
Dex said, standing to one side of the tent, his nose wrinkled in disgust. My eyes fell on the covered bodies lying slap bang in the center of the space. They'd been covered over with two large white sheets, and relief washed through me. At least the cops were trying to preserve some semblance of dignity for the victims. Graham held out a pair of gloves, and I took them grudgingly. I was going to have to touch things, examine things, dead things, and my stomach rolled again at the thought of it all. It wasn't really the thought of blood and viscera that bothered me. Well, it didn't please me either, but I could handle it. What really got to me was the fact that I couldn't separate myself from the fact that these had been people with hopes and dreams, just like me. The pain and the fear they'd felt in their final moments wasn't something I would wish on anyone, and despite knowing that people were murdered every day of the week, well, I just couldn't wrap my head around it. It was just all so pointless, so cruel. Monsters I could understand, well, to an extent anyway. The soulless couldn't exactly be expected to show restraint over the things they wanted. They simply took the things they desired, whether that was material items or the life of a living being. But the thought that another human, that someone like Graham or Dex or any number of others I knew, could do something so heinous. I couldn't exactly include myself in that list. As it was, I wasn't even sure what side of the scale I actually fell on. I was a monster. The things I'd done ensured my belief in that, but I also didn't go around taking whatever in hell I wanted. But I'd still done things I could never erase from my memory, things I never deserved to shake free from my mind. They were the kind of crimes I would carry with me forever. Closing my eyes, I tried to suck in a deep breath, but the strange air invaded my nose and coated the back of my throat with its thick, cloying scent. I snapped the gloves on and opened my eyes once more to find Graham and Dex studying me carefully. What? I asked, the sharpness of my tone causing color to flood Dex's cheeks.
Are you feeling all right?
Graham said, concern lurking in his gaze. I knew that look. It was the same one he'd given me outside after I'd had my little magical accident. As all right as I can be, considering we're about to look at more dead bodies. Steeling myself, I strode forward and daintily gripped the edge of the first sheet before flipping it back to reveal what lay beneath. It took a few moments for my brain to catch up with what my eyes were actually looking at. Two bodies lay on the ground, a man and a woman, their naked skin discolored in the artificial glow of the lights set up inside the tent.
Jesus Christ,
Graham said, stealing the words straight from my own mouth. Their eyes were stitched shut, thick black cords dark against the mottled pallor of their skin. Their mouths were stitched up with the same precision and black cord. The bruising around their eyes and mouth told a story I didn't really want to know. They'd obviously been alive when the psycho had gone to work on them as though they were some sort of bizarre set of rag dolls. Leaning in over the bodies, my eyes picked out the same cord that had been used to stitch their hands together. Their fingers were entwined, and the bruising and half-moon fingernail shapes across both of their hands told me they'd clung to each other as their flesh had been painstakingly stitched together.
So, you see why it was sent over to you first,
Dex said, his voice cutting across my own thoughts. Graham, what makes you so sure this wasn't preternatural? I asked, glancing up at the other man standing over the two bodies.
What makes you think it was preternatural?
He said, turning the tables and throwing my question right back at me. And he was right. Why was there a niggling doubt in the back of my mind? I couldn't feel any magic. There was no lingering trace of the preternatural, or at least not in the way there normally was. But at the same time, this was weird. Far too weird to be just a run-of-the-mill psycho. Well, for one thing, how did he get them to lie still while he stitched them together? Or stitched their eyes and mouths shut?
He could have drugged them,
Dex suggested. With a shake of my head, I pointed out the marks on their hands. Drugs strong enough to paralyze would mean they couldn't grip each other hard enough to leave contusions on each other's hands. You can see where she dug her fingernails into his hand.
Tied them down while he worked,
Graham said, crouching down over the bodies. I could tell from the expression he wore that despite the fact that he'd ruled it a human kill, there was something he wasn't happy about. But I couldn't very well ask him what his problem was with Dex standing next to us. There isn't any rope burn on their wrists or ankles, or really any of the usual places you'd expect to find it, I pointed out. What has the coroner said about this? I asked, addressing Dex, who looked as perplexed as I felt.
It's Tyrell, so he's keeping all of his cards close to his chest. Wouldn't give us anything at all to go on, just wanted the bodies moved and brought to him downtown. Well, the bodies and the ground they're resting on.
The ground? I leaned down a little lower and peered at the grass that disappeared beneath the body of the woman next to me. It was then I saw it, and my throat closed over, making breathing almost impossible. Shit, I said, jerking back away from the body, the sudden movement landing me on my ass.
What is it?
Graham said, his eyes studying my face carefully. There was a warning in his gaze, and I could practically hear his voice in my head telling me to quell my magic. It was good advice. What I'd just seen had sent a shiver of magic racing across my skin. Not my own. I wasn't even sure if it was human, but it was definitely connected to the feeling of offense the earth itself expressed.
So you saw it,
Dex said, the look on his face sending a worm of fear deep in my gut. It was as though he knew what I'd seen, that he had an understanding of the kind of magic needed to pull off something like this. He stitched them into the earth, I said, my words a little strained as I fought to find my equilibrium once more.
How is that even possible?
Graham said, sinking lower onto the grass. How he could even get that close to the bodies was beyond me. Their fear and pain practically rolled off their skin. I could still feel them as though they were trapped within their own bodies, their souls sealed within, their tombs made of flesh and bone. Was that why I couldn't feel any magic? The thought almost staggered me as I stared at the corpses of the two dead victims. Whatever had been done to them, was it sealed inside them? Sealed into the earth? Graham, we have to take this case back from the cops. This isn't a human kill, I said, doing my damnedest to keep the quiver of fear out of my voice.
I know,
he said, his face practically glued to the ground as he examined the black cord that held them pinned to the earth. The area needs to be sealed, quarantined even, until we can defuse it.
That might be a problem. You guys handed the case over to us. We have jurisdiction now, and I'm pretty sure you can't just walk in here and declare something as preternatural without proof, especially as you signed off on it as human in the first place.
Dex piped up, his voice authoritarian.
Dexter, we're the elite. If we say it's preternatural, then that is exactly what it is. We don't need proof the way you might. I don't have to make a case to you or anyone else for that matter.
Graham said, his voice icy, all traces of the friendliness he'd shown towards Dex earlier now gone. Dex straightened up, drawing himself up to his full height, his fists tightening at his sides as he attempted to stare Graham down.
I'd heard you'd changed, but I didn't realize just how much until now. There was a time when you'd have agreed with me, Graham, stood with me as a brother in blue. What the hell happened to you?
The tone in Dex's voice betrayed his disgust, and I felt my own hostilities rise.
I grew up, something you have yet to do. Now, if you've got a problem with the elite stepping in and taking your case out from underneath you, then I suggest you take it up with your captain. This isn't how we do it, and you know that,
Dex warned, shooting me a sideways glance before he strode for the exit. The moment he was out of earshot, I turned my attention back to Graham. We can't really just walk in and take the case, can we? Graham shook his head and dropped his gaze to the bodies on the grass in front of us.
No, but we needed something to buy us some time. Dex is smart. He'll go to his captain and come back here with all of his facts straight. That gives us about 10 minutes to figure out what the hell is going on here.
Graham, we need to claim the scene back. They can't be allowed to touch anything else. I can't explain it, but there's something really wrong here. Don't you feel it? He shook his head and peered into my face.
Are you sure it's not just the after effects of you trying to swallow back your own powers earlier?
Shaking my head, I studied the bodies. Whoever did this sealed something inside the bodies. Graham took a step back from the corpses. The change in his expression told me everything I needed to know.
What sort of something are we talking about here?
He asked. I shrugged and continued my study of the bodies. Without being able to walk the scene, I can't tell you anything else. Your guess is really as good as mine.
So where do we get the proof that this is preternatural when it was already declared human?
Why did you declare it human? I asked, glancing back up at Graham. It wasn't like him to make a mistake like that. He was one of the best at his job, and normally he erred on the side of caution, not handing a case over to the cops until he was completely certain it was human and nothing else.
John sent me half the file. It's not an excuse. The part he did send me contained abnormalities, but nothing so weird I would rule it preternatural. When I got out from my visit with Jess, he'd sent me the other half, and I just knew.
But by then it was already too late. Oh, that bastard, I said, not bothering to keep the anger I felt from my voice.
Look, I'm certainly no fan of John, but he wouldn't do something like this deliberately. If this blows up, it's going to be the elite's ass on the line.
If this blows up, Graham, it's going to be our asses on the line. You know John will pass the book the first opportunity he gets. You work with me, and, well, he's not my greatest fan. If this goes wrong, this is his chance to get rid of us once and for all. Graham nodded thoughtfully before dropping back onto his knees next to the bodies.
Fine. Then I say we get on with finding ourselves some proof that this is preternatural.
Not you. I need you to keep watch. Let me know the minute Dex is on his way back.
Why? What are you going to do?
Graham shot me a curious look. I'm going to walk the scene. It's the only thing I can do to get us the proof we need, I said, tearing off the gloves I'd been wearing. As much as I hated the thought of it, this was going to require skin-on-skin contact, especially if I was going to get the information I needed before Dex kicked us out.
We don't have a warrant,
Graham said, and we won't have one if I don't get us something we can work with. Now please, go and stand guard, I said, sucking a breath in through my gritted teeth. He didn't continue arguing with me, and for that I was grateful. My magic was already unstable. The last thing I needed to add to the explosive mix was anger. If I did that, then... well, it just wouldn't be a good idea to lose control of the scene. Forcing my mind to quieten, I took a large breath in through my nose and let it out, slowly, before dropping my hands to the nearest body. Chapter 5. I wasn't sure exactly what I was expecting to happen, but it sure as hell wasn't nothing. The victim's skin was icy beneath my touch, but it had a waxy consistency that had nothing to do with the usual feel of death. The skin was practically slimy, and it took all of my willpower to just keep my hands pressed to the woman's chest. Nothing happened. There was just the steady rise and fall of my own breathing, and I could make out the faint sounds of Graham as he shuffled awkwardly just outside the tent. The wind ruffled the grass once more. The sound of it whispering through the blades sent a shiver of something I couldn't quite figure out down my spine. The last time I'd walked a scene, the dead body had come back and attempted to rip my throat out. But this, whatever was going on here, well, that was kind of the problem. Nothing was going on. Concentrating a little harder, I drew forth a little power, the feel of it curling up from inside, sending a frisson of anticipation across my skin. It was as though my body understood that this was what I was meant to do, that the power I felt, the power I wielded, was second nature to me, and if I would just get out of my own way, things would be easier. Pushing my power down my arms and into the body in front of me, I waited for the scene to come to life. Everything that had occurred here had left a mark on the earth, scarred it. The memory should have flared to life. The pain and fear the victims felt had soaked into the ground, and it was that my power tried to latch onto. But just like the bodies, their emotions were slimy, and each time my power found them and attempted to anchor them in place, they slipped away, out of my grip. They slithered around me like snakes, untouched and unmoved by my magic. "Shit," I muttered, drawing some more power from my center and driving it into the ground. Static raged in my ears, and the faint sound of Graham calling to me caught the edge of my hearing, but as hard as I tried to follow the sound of his voice back, I couldn't. Pain ripped through the center of my body, and I screamed, a long, ragged, piercing cry of agony. My grip on the body in front of me fell away as I hit the ground. The smell in the tent intensified, smothering me beneath its cloying weight as something shifted inside me. It spread within me, its tentacles wrapping around my organs, sealing itself inside me. I opened my mouth to scream again, but there was no sound. My hands scrambled down at my sides, closing around the hilt of my athame, and I drew it up from my weapons belt.
"Morgan!"
Graham's voice came back to me in a flood of sound, and I jerked in his grip. The hold he had on my arms sent another kick of adrenaline coursing through my veins. "Let me go," I said, fighting his hold.
"Not until you give me the blade,"
he said, the look in his eyes betraying his fear. My hair was stuck to the back of my neck, my sweat cold as it coated my skin, and I gave up the athame without a second thought.
"Christ, Morgan, what the hell happened? I thought you said you were just going to walk the scene,"
he said as he dropped back onto his knees next to me.
"I was trying to, but..."
I cut off, my hands automatically reaching towards my stomach. Fighting against the white shirt I wore, I dragged it up and searched my skin for wounds. But there was nothing. I'd felt it. I'd felt something pierce me, force its way inside my body and spread through me, bit by bit, killing pieces of me. "Graham, is there anything on my back?" I asked, shuffling around to reveal my back to him. Glancing back over my shoulder, I studied his face as he checked me over and then shook his head.
"Not a mark. Now are you going to tell me what the hell you were doing? I'm standing guard outside the tent like you asked when I hear you screaming, and I come in here to find you about to commit seppuku."
"What does that even mean?" I asked, shooting him a confused look before letting my shirt drop back down.
"With your athame, you were about to gut yourself. If I hadn't stopped you, then this would be a very different conversation."
His words sent a thrill of fear racing through me. There had been a moment where I'd been convinced that if I didn't cut whatever it was spreading around inside me out, that it would kill me. I'd felt its black bleakness stretching out across my insides. Was that what the other two victims had felt, too? If it was, then they'd suffered beyond measure. That kind of death wasn't something I would wish on anyone. But if I had enough strength to try and cut the bleakness out of myself, then why hadn't they tried to do the same? Other than the marks they'd left on each other's hands, there wasn't another mark on them. Well, nothing I could see anyway. Whatever had attacked me, I'd felt it enter through my back. Maybe when we could safely move the bodies and look at their backs.
"Did you find anything we can..."
Graham cut off as the tent flap slapped open and Dex strode back inside, two uniformed officers in tow.
I'm calling you on your bullshit, Graham. I've spoken to the captain and to the head of the elite, neither of which are too pleased with either of you.
I groaned inwardly. I could just imagine John's face, the look of glee as he promised to deal with us, reprimand us for the mess we were making, a mess he was responsible for.
Dex, just listen,
Graham said, his tone soft and placating.
I don't have time for this. You had your shot at it, and you yourself declared it a human kill. That makes it my jurisdiction, and I intend on carrying out my job to the letter of the law. You might have forgotten what that really means, Graham, but I haven't.
There was a finality to his voice, and I knew we were seconds from getting tossed out on our asses. The tent flap opened once more, and two men dressed in forensic overalls stepped inside, making the already cramped space even tighter. Without a word, they moved past Dex towards the bodies, and I grabbed the arm of the nearest one.
You can't move them. Quarantine protocols need to be in place. We need to get someone down here who can cleanse the entire scene and make the bodies safe for transport.
The forensic guy shot me a baffled look over the top of the surgical mask he wore covering the lower half of his face before shaking his head and jerking free of my grip.
We're gonna need some room in here if we're gonna move the bodies without disturbing the evidence,
the other guy said. He was already beginning to prep the furthest body for removal, and fear curled in my stomach.
Dex, you can't do this. Please, just listen to me. If you attempt to move the bodies without...
He shook his head and cut me off with a wave of his hand before I had an opportunity to finish speaking.
Just get them out of here before they screw up anything else,
he said to the two uniformed officers standing next to him. They stepped forward, the nearest one grabbing my arm just as something behind me gurgled and hissed. Jerking free of his grip, I had just enough time to turn and watch the center of the first body split wide open. A gash as long as my arm opened up from neck to below the male victim's navel. The hiss of air escaping from his abdomen had my stomach rolling in revulsion as the smell of putrid food and crap hit the air. But the smell was the least of our worries. The gray column of smoke that thrust up into the air was something I'd never seen before. I stared at it, the forensic guy hazily visible through it as it thickened and pulsed before surging back towards him. Crap, I said, more to myself than anyone else present in the tent, as the gray smoke poured in through the forensic guy's eyes and ears, causing him to start screaming. He dropped to the ground, his spine bowing as he writhed before finally growing completely still. The rest of the gray smoke disappeared out beneath the edge of the tent walls, and the sound of men screaming told me all hell had broken loose. The forensic guy twitched once and sat up. Crap, I said again, and drew my gun, settling its weight in my hands as I took aim and pulled the trigger.
Chapter 6.
Someone slammed into me, knocking my aim off and causing the bullet to just graze the shoulder of the now possessed forensic guy. Although what had possessed him, well, that I had no clue about. Demonic possession was a black art. I'd seen victims of possession before, their eyes swallowed by the darkness that dwelled within them. This. Well, this was something I'd never come across before. Jerking my elbow up, I caught Dex square in the chin as he fought to try and wrest the gun from my grip.
What the hell are you doing?
He shouted, falling back away from me, holding a hand to his bloodied face. The creature that had been the forensic guy roared, the sound reverberating through the tent. It hit me like a fist square in the chest, knocking me completely off balance, and I dropped to the ground, gun sliding out of reach as my heartbeat stuttered in my chest. Power flowed in around me, making it suddenly hard to breathe. The air itself shimmered with heat, and sweat dripped down my back as I struggled to draw a breath that didn't want to melt the inside of my throat. The creature seemed to flow upwards onto its feet, the human body it possessed moving fluidly as it advanced slowly across the space towards the still intact body of the woman. Crouching down next to her, it trailed its hand over her cheek, towards her chest, and instinctively I knew what it planned to do next.
We can't let it open her up! We can't allow it to release the other half of whatever in hell that gray smoke is!
I shouted, my voice hoarse as I threw a glance back at Graham's stunned face. He recovered fast, drawing his own gun and taking aim at the creature, giving me the chance to scramble across the ground to where my own Glock 19 lay discarded. I really needed to work harder in training. Once was one time too many for a creature to disarm me, and this was the second time it had happened in as many cases.
You can't shoot him! He's got a wife and kids and—
Dex shouted, his voice high and frightened.
Get back or I will shoot you,
Graham said, his voice utterly calm as he took aim at the creature, his arm steady. He wouldn't miss. The creature lifted its gaze to him, the frustration in its gray eyes sending a frisson of fear down my spine. It moved then, lunging forward over the remains on the ground, directly towards Graham. His gun went off, two rounds burying themselves into the center of the creature before it tackled him to the ground. Graham! The panic and emotion in my voice surprised me as the scream tore from my throat. I crossed the tent in a blur, emptying my clip into the back of the creature before I really thought about what I was doing. The gun clicked empty as it turned to face me. The splash of crimson down the front of what had been pristine overalls was startling. Its warm and wet hand wrapped around my throat, lifting me from the ground, its grip tightening until there was no air left to enter my lungs, and still its vice-like hold tightened. Power surged inside me, clawing its way up from the depths of my very soul, and I slammed my hand against its chest. Forcing everything I had down into that one concentrated area, I thrust my power into its body. The creature stared at me, a momentary flicker of intelligent recognition in its gray eyes, before it threw its head back and screamed. The gray smoke that had poured into the forensic guy rushed out of him, dissipating into the air. The grip around my throat disappeared and I dropped to the grass as the possessed man crumpled to the ground. The second I hit the dry earth, I was already scrambling towards Graham. He lay on his back, staring up at the ceiling of the tent. The front of his white shirt was destroyed, the edges of it frayed, his blood slowly soaking into it, causing it to stick to him. Graham, can you hear me? I asked, pressing my fingers to his neck, to the place where I knew his pulse should have been. My hands shook, and I suddenly wasn't sure if I was feeling the thready beat of his heart or if my own tremors were tricking me. Dropping my head to one side, I listened for any signs of breathing. His chest wasn't rising and falling the way it should have been, and there was no sound leaving his mouth. Christ, Graham, you can't do this to me! You can't leave me! I said, pressing my hands to his bloodied shirt as I began chest compressions. Call an ambulance! I said, barking my order in Dex's general direction.
Is he dead?
He asked.
Just call an ambulance and stop wasting goddamn time, I said,
grunting with the effort of forcing Graham's heart to pump blood through his body. Dex dragged out his cell phone, and I was only vaguely aware of him talking into it as I continued to work on Graham. There was no reaction from him. I so desperately wanted him to sit up and give me his indulgent fatherly smile that he had perfected so well, but I thrust down on his chest repeatedly with nothing but the labored sound of my own breathing for company. The snap of one of his ribs breaking broke my concentration, and bile climbed the back of my throat. It was normal. I needed to remember that. Broken ribs were something he could recover from. Brain damage due to his heart no longer pumping blood around his body, well, that wasn't something he could come back from.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
I counted it out loud, my voice breathy as my arms began to feel like lead weights were attached to them. I could feel my shoulders beginning to lock up, my own breathing becoming shallow as sparks of light swam in my vision.
Let me help, Amber,
Dex said, his voice quiet and calm. I shook my head, but even that was too much effort, and I took one look down at Graham's open, staring eyes and moved aside. If I screwed up and faltered, if my body gave out before the EMTs arrived, then I would fail him. All the good intentions in the world of wanting to save him didn't count for jack shit if I couldn't actually do it. Dex stepped in seamlessly, instantly picking up where I'd left off, his rhythm fast and steady as he pumped Graham's chest. Shuffling a little closer to Graham, I leaned in over him and pressed my mouth to his ear. You son of a bitch, you can't leave me now. You can't leave me to face these bastards alone. You come back to me, or so help me, I will follow you into death and drag your ass back if I have to. Sweat had beaded across Dex's brow, and I moved back to take his position from him, our switch out seamless, both of us working to keep Graham alive. My arms tired much faster the second time around, but the EMTs burst through the opening to the tent just as my shoulders were beginning to lock up. I shuffled aside to let them in to work on him, answering their questions on autopilot as I stared at his unmoving face. They moved fast, much faster than I'd expected, but then this wasn't something I was particularly used to. I'd been trained in CPR, but I'd never had to use it before. They stripped his shirt away, calling numbers and stats to one another as they fitted the shock pads to his chest.
No pulse,
one of the paramedics said. CPR wasn't like it was in the movies. It wouldn't restart his heart. Only an electric current could ensure that. Something about the rhythms of the heart being an electric current. All chest compressions could do was keep his blood pumping, keep his vital organs supplied with the circulation they needed to survive. Clear! That one word set my body to trembling, and I pressed my bloodied hand to my face in order to keep my emotions in check. I couldn't break down now. Not now. Not yet. Graham jolted up from the ground, his body hopping as the current passed through him. Silence followed. My own heart came to a shuddering halt.
Beep. Beep. Beep.
We've got a rhythm, the female paramedic said, instantly settling the oxygen mask over Graham's face as she started bagging him. Pushing up onto my feet, I followed them as they wheeled Graham outside, my body moving sluggishly as I tried to keep up with their unrelenting pace.
Amber, wait!
Dex wrapped his hand around my arm, jolting me to a halt. Without hesitating, I swung around to face him, my hand balling into a fist as I brought my arm up. The satisfying thud of my fist connecting with his jaw filled my ears. He sprawled back from me, his hand automatically going to his face, his fingers brushing away the blood welling in the cut on his lip.
What was that for? I helped you.
If you'd let me do my job in the first place, none of this would be happening. Instead, you let your ego get the better of you, and now a man who is twice the man you are, twice the detective you will ever be, is fighting for his life.
I'm sorry, I didn't know. I was told it was human. I swear, I didn't know.
I didn't wait for him to continue spewing his excuses. I didn't want to hear them. If Graham died... I cut my own thoughts off. He would be fine. He had to be fine. There simply wasn't another way around it. I believed in him, and if anyone had the ability to go toe-to-toe with death and come out the other side unscathed, it was Graham. Picking up my pace, I jogged after the ambulance crew, reaching them as they finished loading Graham inside. Are you coming with us? The female paramedic asked. Yeah, I said, climbing up next to her and strapping myself into one of the seats in the back of the ambulance. My heart rate had started to race, and I stared down at the bruising that was starting to bloom across my knuckles. Graham would kick my ass if he knew what I'd done. And as the first tear rolled down my cheek, I lifted my gaze to him. When he was better, he could kick my ass all he wanted. In fact, I'd welcome it. Chapter 7. Sitting in the waiting room, I stared at the board covered in little leaflets. The usual what to do when in crisis or how to handle illness in a loved one. I hated hospitals. The smell of disinfectant invaded all of my pores, but that wasn't what bothered me most. It was the overwhelming stench of death. Hospitals were filled with the scent of it. It was never about healing and recovery. They were the place people came to die. The broken and ill whose lives were coming to a close, usually far sooner than their loved ones would like. Leaning forward, I placed my elbows on my knees and buried my face in my hands. I was beginning to lose it. I'd lost count of the number of hours I'd sat here waiting for some sort of news on Graham, and if I didn't get any soon, I was going to flip out. Or at least that was what I promised myself. It had been the only thought to keep me going over the agonizing wait.
Where is he?
A female voice cut through my solitary thoughts, and I lifted my head, my gaze settling on a middle-aged woman, her bottle blonde hair perfectly coiffed around her face. She strode forward, and the animosity that rolled from her made me recoil. You are? I asked, folding my arms defensively across my chest. I could still feel the blood on my hands. It was dried into my nail beds, and getting it out was going to be an ordeal. But none of it mattered. This was my fault, and there was a part of me that believed I deserved to wear Graham's blood on my hands.
I'm his wife. They told me he'd been brought in here.
She paused and looked me over a little more carefully.
Oh God, is that his blood?
Her voice went up several octaves, and I watched her waver on her feet. A tall, lean man stepped into the room and grabbed her arm, swinging her around so she could bury her face in his shoulder.
She's covered in his blood, Henry. Please, she has to leave. I can't have someone like that hanging around. She's a bad omen.
The woman's voice was marred by hysteria, but I could still make out her words. The urge to hop up from the plastic seat my ass had practically molded onto and grab her by her blonde bobble head washed over me. Resisting, I crossed my legs and leaned back against the white, sterile wall the plastic seat I was perched on was pressed against. I'm Graham's colleague. I was there when the incident occurred. I'm covered in his blood because I was doing CPR on him. My voice was clipped and authoritarian, and I hated it. Yet I couldn't help it as the woman continued to sob into Henry's shoulder. He shot me a nasty look and in a nasally voice said, "Can you please leave? Can't you see how much you're upsetting her?" Sucking in a deep breath, I stood and strode out into the hall, anger bubbling in my veins as I paced back and forth. I certainly didn't remember Graham mentioning a wife in the picture, and his apartment had that bachelor feel to it. The impression I'd gotten was that he was separated from his wife, probably after Jessica's disappearance. So to have her now rush in here and throw me out after everything. I drank down another deep breath and let it out slowly. What was the point in getting wound up about something as petty as that? She was his wife. That was all there was to it. I needed to get over myself. He might have been my partner, but she'd known him longer, and separated or not, they had a kid together. That had to count for something. The doctor who had taken over Graham's case from the minute he'd arrived in the hospital appeared around the corner of the nurse's station, his expression grim as he caught sight of me, and I swallowed hard.
"You came in with Graham Lance? Who are you?"
he asked, moving down the hall towards me. "I'm his partner. We both work for the Elite." I got the words out before the look on his face caused my throat to close over. There was a pity in his eyes that could only mean one thing, and it wasn't something I wanted to hear. I opened my lips to speak to him, but my mouth was so dry my tongue was stuck to the roof of my mouth and the words refused to form. Instead, I was left to nod at him like one of those nodding dogs people enjoyed putting on the dashboards of their cars as he spoke at me.
"His injuries are serious, but he seems to be stable for now. We operated in an attempt to stop the internal bleeding he came in with, but while on the table he suffered a cardiac arrest. It was a close thing, but he's strong."
The hallway lurched around me, and I slammed my hand into the wall in an attempt to steady myself. There was way too much white, and it only served to intensify the tilting inside my head. Steady, Amber.
"Are you all right? Is there someone here with you?"
I shook my head and did my best to unstick my